Now we're ready to move into the 21st chapter. Verse 1, then there was a famine in the days of David, 3 years, year after year. Now, we do not read about this famine anyplace else. It's something that we only learn about in this one passage. And we learn that it was a famine that went for 3 years, which means that God put some kind of a punishment on the land of Israel, and he did it long enough for them to be able to really feel the effects of it. Of course, sometimes you can miss one crop, and it's made up for then the next year. But here, when you've missed three crops in a row, 3 years, then there's time to stop and think, you know, what is happening that we're not being able to raise any more crops. This is a famine that would truly be felt, because by this time the supplies of food no doubt were very greatly diminished. And David inquired of the Lord. That is, David went to the Lord to find out why they were having this famine. What could be done to rectify the situation? What did God want? What was God punishing them for? And we're going to find that God does give him an answer. And the Lord answered, it is for Saul and for his bloody house, because they slew the Gibeonites. Here was a sin done by Saul, and maybe even being perpetuated by his family, which had not been adequately punished. The full consequences of this sin had not yet been realized by the house of Saul. It was a sin that involved the slaying of the Gibeonites. Now, the Gibeonites were a people who were actually Hittites by origin, although they're going to be called Amorites, which the word Amorite is a general term, including many of the inhabitants of the land of Canaan. The Gibeonites had deceived the children of Israel when they first came into the land of Canaan. They made them think that they had come from a far-off city, and they made them, as a result of being deceived, swear that they wouldn't do them any harm. And then they discovered that the Gibeonites lived right there in the land of Canaan, but since they'd already sworn to them that they wouldn't do them harm, then they didn't do them harm. But they made them servants. They made them the hewers of wood and drawers of water. And they were especially active in the work about the altar. And this is found in Joshua chapter 9, and especially verse 23. So here was this whole tribe of people that were not true Israelites, and somehow or other they had been slain by Saul. Saul had slain them. And we don't read any account of Saul having done this, and we don't know precisely when this happened. Some think that Saul did this when he massacred the priest that time, because the Gibeonites were closely associated with the work of the altar. And so when he killed the priest, he also killed some of them. And remember now, the nation was under an oath to this people that they wouldn't do them harm. And so Saul violated that oath. Now notice, God says that this fast is for Saul and for his bloody house. So this was not just an act of Saul, no doubt, but it also included actions of his house. And his house is called a bloody house, so that Saul was not the only one that was guilty of shedding this innocent blood, but his house also was guilty of it. Verse 2, and the king called the Gibeonites and said unto them. Now the Gibeonites were not of the children of Israel, but of the remnant of the Amorites. And the children of Israel had sworn unto them, and Saul sought to slay them in his zeal to the children of Israel and Judah. So we have another comment about these Gibeonites, and how that the children of Israel had sworn unto them that they would not do them any harm, and that this was a violation of the oath. And we know that God definitely intends for a man to fulfill an oath. When an oath is made, then that certainly should be lived up to, and Saul was not living up to that when he had slain these people. And this parenthesis further says that Saul sought to slay them in his zeal to the children of Israel and Judah. That is, somehow or other, he thought he was clearing the land of impurities, of foreigners. He was trying to be zealous in providing the inheritance for the children of Israel and Judah. And it may be that he was even trying to make up for the fact that he had been negligent in completely destroying the Amalekites like he was supposed to have done. But at any rate, Saul is disannulling a very solemn vow that this nation has made. He has rescinded an act of his government that was done before he came into power, and he was taking his royal prerogative and power as king beyond what should have been done when he carried this out. And somehow or other, his house, his descendants, were also involved in this, because they're described here as being a bloody house. Verse 3, wherefore David said unto the Gibeonites, what shall I do for you? And wherewith shall I make the atonement, that you may bless the inheritance of the Lord? So instead of David deciding what kind of punishment should be meted out, what should be done to rectify the situation with the Gibeonites, he came to them and he asked them what they wanted. What shall I do for you, and wherewith shall I make the atonement, that you may bless the inheritance of the Lord? What can I do to make things right? What can I do to make things so that you will now be in a position to bless the children of Israel and not hold something against them? And so we see then that they're given the peculiar advantage of being able to prescribe whatever punishment it is they want to atone for the wrong that's been done to them. They're being allowed to act as the judge in this case. And that's a very unusual privilege to be granted to anybody, but these Gibeonites have been so wronged, they have been so faithful in their service, that David gives them a choice as to what they want to rectify the situation. And the Gibeonites said unto him, we will have no silver nor gold of Saul, nor of his house. Neither for us shalt thou kill any man in Israel. So, first of all, they didn't want any silver or gold. And we learn in Numbers 35, verses 31 through 33, that where the sin of murder was concerned, they were not to take gold or silver to atone for that, but the law of God was blood for blood. And this is found, of course, in Genesis 9, verse 6, that those that slay with the sword shall be slain with the sword. Genesis 9 and 6 says, whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man. So this is the law, then, of vengeance that's involved here. And as we know, the sin of murder was the only sin that man was allowed to take vengeance for. He could get revenge on those that committed this act of murder, or who even accidentally killed someone if they didn't make it to a city of refuge in time. And so they were not to take any kind of money to pay off for this sin. This was a sin that required somebody's blood to be shed in order to atone for it. And so they tell David that we don't want silver nor gold, not of Saul nor of his house. And of course it seemed that his house was equally guilty with Saul. And they also say, neither for us shalt thou kill any man in Israel. Yeah, we don't want you to do the job of killing someone. It's not going to be your job to do. And he said, what shall ye say that I will do for you? And they answered the king, the man that consumed us, and that devised against us that we should be destroyed from remaining in any of the coast of Israel. Now they're talking about Saul here. Saul must have done him a very great wrong. They describe this as him having consumed them and destroying them so that none of them would remain in Israel. So they say, let seven men of his sons be delivered unto us, and we will hang them up under the Lord in Gibeah of Saul, whom the Lord did choose. So we're not going to ask you to put anybody to death for this act, David, but we want the privilege of doing it ourselves. You be the one that selects seven men that come from the sons of Saul, and you deliver them unto us, and we'll hang them up. And of course, this would be their way of getting vengeance for the bloody acts of Saul and his house. They're going to have blood for blood. They're going to have life for life here. And we'll hang them up under the Lord in Gibeah of Saul. We're going to go right to the very place where Saul lived. This will be an example for Saul's family, for any who should try to follow in the steps of Saul against us. We'll hang them up unto the Lord. So that we're doing something here apparently that the Lord had approved of, that's going to be according to the law, and they're not going outside of the law or outside of the realm of God to do this. We're going to do it in Gibeah of Saul, whom the Lord did choose. Now, the remaining David that Saul was the man that the Lord did choose. We're talking about the king Saul, not any other Saul. And this is going to be done right there in his home territory. And the king said, I will give them. Now the one prerogative and the one duty that David had was to provide the 7 men for the people of Gibeah to hang. And David agreed, I will give them. Verse 7, but the king spared Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, because of the Lord's oath that was between them, between David and Jonathan, the son of Saul. So the one person that would not be involved in this, the one descendant of Saul that David would not deliver up to the Gibeonites, was going to be Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, because he had an oath himself with Jonathan to take care of his son, to take care of his children, and Mephibosheth was the one left from the offspring of Jonathan. So he would be the only one that would be actually spared from being eligible to be selected by David to be hanged. But the king took 2 sons of Rizpah, the daughter of Ai, whom she bare unto Saul, Armoni and Mephibosheth. Now, of course, this Mephibosheth here is certainly a different one from the son of Jonathan. And the 5 sons of Michal, the daughter of Saul, whom she brought up for Adriel, the son of Barzillai, the Meholathite. So David selects 2 of Saul's sons, whom he had by a concubine, and 5 of his grandsons, whom his daughter Merab bore to Adriel, according to 1 Samuel 18, verse 19, but his daughter Michal brought up. That sounds like these were Michal's children, but actually Michal was never married to Adriel, but Saul's other daughter, Merab, was married to Adriel, and it seems then that Michal brought them up, or Michal raised them. So we have 2 sons and 5 grandsons of Saul now that are delivered up to the Gibeonites. We also remember that Merab had originally been promised to David, and Saul acted very treacherously toward David when he gave Merab to Adriel instead of letting David have him as he promised. So here we find even that sin is still being punished, it seems, in the selecting of these 5 sons as some of the ones that are going to be killed by the Gibeonites. Now we have to believe that these 7 men that are being delivered up to the people of Gibeah are all guilty themselves. They're not just innocent people that have been selected at random, but they're a part of this bloody house of Saul. They've carried on the tradition of Saul in their deeds and actions, and so now they're actually being punished not only for what Saul has done, but they're being punished for what they have done. Verse 9, and he delivered them into the hands of the Gibeonites, and they hanged them in the hill before the Lord. So here these 7 were hanged. They were put to death by the Gibeonites. This was done before the Lord, and this indicates that the Lord did approve of this. This was the way the Lord would have this to be done. They hanged before the Lord. Now remember, whenever someone was hanged, this was a placing a curse upon them. This was a very undignified way to die. In Deuteronomy 21, verse 23, speaking about being hanged, and if a man have committed a sin worthy of death, and he be put to death, and thou hang him on a tree, his body shall not remain all night upon the tree, but thou shalt in any wise bury him that day. For he that is hanged is accursed of God, that thy land be not defiled, which the Lord thy God giveth thee for an inheritance. So this was not to happen. He was not to be left hanging because he was a curse. And as we know, our Savior, who, because he was killed by being made to hang on a cross, or on the tree, so it says, he became a curse for us, so that he then could make the proper atonement for our sins today. So these men were hanged in Gibeah, right as it were at the door of their own house. They fell all 7 together, and were put to death in the days of harvest, in the first days in the beginning of barley harvest. Now these days of harvest were during the time of the month of March. And the mention of harvest is probably given here for the purpose of indicating the time of year, rather than to show that the famine had been lifted at this time. Verse 10, and Rizpah, the daughter of Ai, took sackcloth and spread it for her upon the rock from the beginning of the harvest until water dropped upon them out of heaven, and suffered either the birds of the air to rest on them by day or the beasts of the field by night. So here we see the story of the mourning of a mother. Rizpah, who was the concubine of Saul, was the mother of two of these men. And so she came out to the site of this execution. She came out where they hung from probable crosses or some type of tree-like structures. And she stayed there from the time of the hanging, which was going to be in March, until water dropped. And this was probably October. This is whenever the rains would usually come to this area. And that would be when the drought would be broken. And she mourned her sons. She showed her grief by keeping the birds off during the day and the beasts off at night. And she was in a state of mourning by the fact that she took this sackcloth and spread it for her up on the rock. So she demonstrated to the world that she had the faithful concern and love and grieving of a mother. Nevertheless, her sons were doomed to die because of sin. And no doubt they had been involved in this sin. And had this woman been more concerned with keeping them from sin while they were alive, she might not have had to grieve this long at the time of their death. Sin does have its consequences. Sin does have its day of reckoning. And she might have winked at their sins. She might have lived very high and very pleasantly with the wicked deeds that these people had committed. And so now comes the time of reckoning. We have another fact that's unusual. That is that these bodies hung for all this time until water fell. This seems to be a violation of the law that says that the one who is hanged on a tree should not stay there longer than that one day. But this is an exception because these men were to be cursed. They were to be an anathema. They were to have a very unglorious ending because of their sin. And the fact that they had to remain hanging there during this time further emphasized the fact that they truly were to be cursed. This was a punishment for a crime that had gone long unpunished. This was a punishment for a crime that the whole nation was having to suffer for. All the nation was enduring a three-year drought because of this crime. And now that it had been punished, the Gibeonites are satisfied. God is satisfied. Vengeance has been properly taken. And so the punishment of the nation will now be lifted now that the sin has been duly punished. We're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.